It's time for the Tom Sumner Program. The Tom Sumner Program is a live variety show with music, comedy, and special guest interviews every Monday through Friday. The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation. Our theme music is Fruit of the Louvre, provided by Flick composer-producer Howard Eddy. Stay tuned, because it's on now. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation. The Tom Sumner Program. Here's your host.
Hi, this is Tom from the Tom Sumner Program. If you like talk radio that makes you think without telling you what to think, check out our whole show weekdays from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern at TomSumnerProgram.com. Selected segments are also available on this and other radio stations, but you can hear us anytime. Daily editions of the Tom Sumner Program repeat online all day and night on the show's website. Past shows can be found in the website archives. My long format interviews with New York Times best-selling authors, photographers and writers from National Geographic, as well as artists, musicians, candidates, and elected officials are made possible by listeners like you. Support the Tom Sumner Program and Civilized Talk Radio. Visit our website at TomSumnerProgram.com and become a member. You can make a one-time gift or become a sustaining patron by taking the link to the Tom Sumner Program Patreon page. Thanks for listening and thanks for your support.
Do you or someone you know need healthcare coverage? For over 17 years, the Genesee Health Plan has provided affordable healthcare coverage to thousands of Genesee County adults, families, and seniors. Genesee Health Plan covers preventative healthcare services, including doctor's visits, cancer screenings, outpatient mental health services, and much more. Genesee Health Plan provides dental coverage for seniors and veterans at no cost. Get connected to quality healthcare coverage today by calling 844-232-7740 or by visiting Genesee Health Plan.org. Genesee Health Plan, your plan for better health.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you're listening to The Tom Sumner Show. Send your donations today. Check out the website for more details.
Stream us live weekdays from 9 a.m. to noon at TomSumnerProgram.com, made possible by listeners like you.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Tom Sumner, and that regal entry music is actually kind of appropriate for today's show. Welcome to Masterpiece Theater here on the Tom Sumner Program. No, we're going to be talking about, it's all literature today on the show, or at least all authors and or literature. We have a great show coming up in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to talk with a debut novelist who has written, this is like a new genre, eco-fiction, an environmental fable, if you will, called Dreaming the Marsh, by retired attorney Elizabeth McCulloch. And she's a delight to talk to, and she'll be coming up in really just a couple of minutes. And then during the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to have joining us here in the studio from the, well, it used to be the Flint Literary Fest. Now it's called the Flint Festival of Writers. And Sarah Carson will be here, and I think, and guest, maybe, but we'll be talking about next week's, or this week, rather. The event is coming up, and there are some special things and some special partnerships going on with regard to the Flint Festival of Writers. We'll talk about that with Sarah and guest. And then in the third half of our three-hour tour on this, well, actually should be Mystery Theater by the third hour, We're going to talk with the creator of the Jack Salvo series, the third of the series, The Middle Sister, has just come out and is available by author Jesse Miles, who gives readers an inside look into the darker side of Los Angeles with a new detective novel. It's kind of reminiscent of classic 1940s-style private detectives, but set in modern-day L.A. It's called The Middle Sister, and anyway, and he's a delight to talk to as well. So hang out with us and get cultured as we talk to authors and writers on today's edition of the Tom Sumner Program. It is Monday, so we kick off the week with a little intellectual stuff. Tomorrow we'll be going to the theater. Michael Lubaris will be by with some cast members from the Flint Repertory Theater's season opener, and we'll be talking about that in the new season, so be sure and join us tomorrow for that. We got a bunch of cool stuff coming up this week, but I don't have time to get it all in there. In the meantime, up next, my guest, as I mentioned, is Elizabeth McCulloch. She is the author of Dreaming the Marsh, former attorney. She's a retired attorney and turned author. This is her debut novel, but she's a delight to talk to. So we'll take just a brief pause, and when we return, we'll return with author Elizabeth McCulloch. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is the Tom Sumner Program. My guest this hour has a new book that blends fiction. Well, it creates almost a new genre of its own. It's an environmental novel. This is her debut novel, Dreaming the Marsh. My guest is Elizabeth McCulloch. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I almost called you Elizabeth Marsh.
She's probably somebody famous. No, I'm Elizabeth McCulloch.
But you make up a town in Florida, yet this is being described as an environmental fable that is uniquely Floridian. What makes this story so uniquely Floridian?
Well, I think it's partly because it centers on a huge sinkhole, and we are known for our sinkholes. There are a few other places that have them. I think in Eastern Europe there's a lot of sinkholes. But I think what makes it uniquely Floridian is I've lived in North Florida for a long, long time, 45 years, I'm thinking. I'm not sure. But I'm very attached to the landscape and the way North Florida is and the way it looks and the funny mix of very few Florida natives. And when I say natives, I don't mean the early pre-European people, but I mean people who were born in Florida and grew up here. And then a whole bunch of people who came from all over. And everybody's intermingling. And where I live, which is Gainesville, on which Opa-Culla, my fictional town, is loosely based, Gainesville is a little, well, to me it's an oasis. To other people it's probably a hellhole, but sort of an oasis of liberal thought among a southern rural country, fairly conservative area. So you have all these things coming together to make Florida, to make North Florida what it is. North Florida isn't what most people think about when they think about Florida. People think about paved landscape with Mickey Mouse in them. But that's not the part of Florida that I love. And the book draws a lot. I didn't know I could go on like this. the book draws a lot on the very beautiful nature of North Florida, the woods and creeks, and it's just a beautiful place, and I love it.
Well, to some people, Northern Florida seems a little like Southern Georgia.
Yes, indeed, and that's part of. And I'm a little bit fond of Southern Georgia too. I got to tell you, I am a transplant. I moved south in, I want to say, when did I start law school? 1972 or something like that. I moved south, and I moved to Florida in 75 or 76. And sometimes you just, where you grew up isn't your home. It's where you put down your roots when you're grown, and that's what happened to me. So I'm very fond of Southern Georgia. I won't hear a word said against it, although heaven knows the South has its issues, as does the North, as does the West.
And one of the big issues, and it's making kind of a starring debut in the upcoming presidential election in many ways, is the environment and climate change and discussion over green legislation and so on. Before we dig into that, because that is the backdrop in many ways of this novel, I want to ask, you are an attorney, and this is your debut. Is this your debut novel or a debut environmental novel?
No, it's my debut novel. At 72, I'm finally getting published.
When you say finally getting published, does that mean you've got other books that you have tried? Because I know many writers will go through several books before they land on one that gets some attention.
Well, I have 3.5 novels. This one that is being published is the first one that I wrote and tried to get published and tried and tried and tried and tried. And then as I tried and tried and tried, I worked on the second and the third and I guess the fourth. And then my current publisher, Twisted Road Publications, the editor there, who is just the editor of my dreams, he had given me a couple of good critiques, and in a sort of interlude while I waited for her to consider another novel of mine, I went back and made major revisions. And it's that revised version of Dreaming the Marsh that is being published, with, of course, a lot of work since that revision. So that is my first novel, and it's unlike any of my others.
There's the writing, then the rewriting, then the editing.
there's a lot. I love to edit and I love to rewrite.
But
the
you
first
can't
draft
really...
is kind of like jumping off a cliff. But once that's done, I feel great.
When you do the first draft, do you work from outlines and notes and stuff, or does it come out more organically? Do you just start writing and when you're done you go back and turn it into a book?
Somewhere in between.
Yeah.
I always, what happens is an image pops into my mind. So in this book, I was walking along and I saw a house on stilts, and I pictured it, a sinkhole opening up under it and the house falling into it. That's what started it. And then an odd little verse came into my head. You don't know how thoughts come into your head. But I started with the idea of a sinkhole, and it sort of grew from that. Then as I get into a book and I start to find characters, I will always run into sort of brick walls where I think, well, what's going to happen next? You know, I've run out of thoughts. God, I can't just send them to the grocery store with a list. You know, I have an ability to write really boring fiction because I like the details of daily life, and I have to work to be a little more interesting than that. So what will happen is, I mean, the novel I'm working on now, and I feel like I've been working on forever, after 8 years, I did have a kind of outline. I think I knew where it started and how it led through their lives, and I think I know how it ends, although you're never sure till you're done. But then as I work on it, I start making, I think, okay, there's going to be this scene and this scene and this scene, and if I have 3 or 4 scenes in mind to write, that makes it easier to get up in the morning and write. So that's kind of how it works in a sort of muddle.
More with novelist Elizabeth McCulloch straight ahead.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
I'm Julie Lopez with Crime Stoppers. Have you ever wondered what to do if you have information about a crime or the whereabouts of a felony fugitive and you want the police to know but you need to remain anonymous? Well, here's what you can do. You can go to p3tips.com or download the mobile app. You can go to Crime Stoppers of Flint and Genesee County's Facebook page and click on the Leave an Anonymous Tip tab, or you can call 1-800-422-JAIL. All methods are anonymous, and if your help leads to a felony arrest, you may be eligible for a cash reward. Remember, your voice matters.
Discoveries. They happen when we least expect them, in places we thought we knew. And discoveries have a way of teaching us a little more about ourselves along the way. Welcome to Flint and Genesee County, where up north meets down south. Home to Michigan's largest county park system and a vibrant culture. A place filled with discoveries we've yet to make, throughout acres of beautiful lakes, wetlands, and woods, and in the diverse city beyond. Where the uplifting melodies of gospel choirs fill the air, where the work of renowned artists color the galleries and museums, where the fresh fruits and vegetables at the downtown farmers market awaken our senses, and where the cultural center and planetarium broaden our view of the world. Let's spend a few days enjoying the wonders of Flint and Genesee County, where the joy of discovery is pure Michigan. Your trip begins at Michigan.org.
East Village Magazine is the monthly neighborhood magazine read all over Flint. With support from grants, donations, and advertisers, East Village Magazine's talented local writers give you an in-depth look at local news, issues, and people that make Flint, Flint. Copies of East Village Magazine are available at many of your favorite shops and restaurants around Flint or online at eastvillagemagazine.org. East Village Magazine, community-focused and community-supported.
Do you ever feel like you need an attitude adjustment? Are you wishing there was a magic pill or a new app for your mobile device? Why don't you try live local music? Music can make you dance, bring back fond memories, inspire you to be more creative, whether you attend a child's school concert or recital, go to a local symphony concert, visit local bars and restaurants that feature dance music, sing-along piano, or jazz and blues. Music could be just what you're looking for. Supporting live local music is more than a way to support your local artists and economy. It's a great way to improve your own quality of life. Support live local music. This message is brought to you by the Flint Institute of Music at thefim.org and the Tom Sumner Program at tomsumnerprogram.com. It feels good to support live local music.
Tom Sumner Program has hosted live candidate forums for local, state, and national offices at bars, restaurants, coffee shops, and colleges. Armchair Politics has gone to Lansing, Frankenmuth, Birch Run, and Hell. Michigan, that is. We've done shows all the way to the Mighty Mac and back to the Briggs. We've done remotes from a baseball stadium in Lansing, a grocery store opening in Flint, and from a moving train. We'd like you to tell us where to go next. You can write us at TomSumnerProgram.com, call us at 810-339-8255 or contact us on Facebook or Twitter. This is your chance to tell the Tom Sumner Program where to go.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Hi, I'm U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow, and I'm listening to The Tom Sumner Show.
Stream us live weekdays at 9 Eastern at TomSumnerProgram.com. Made possible by listeners like you.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
More with novelist Elizabeth McCulloch straight ahead. A question that I ask a lot of writers is, do the characters come first and you come up with stuff that would likely happen to them? Or is there a situation, an event, a story, and then you assign people to it?
Just let me think. Okay, we got the house falling in the sinkhole. And I sort of had to think, well, you know, who would care about that? And I thought of a geologist. And so I started working on this geologist, who was a tiny bit inspired by a man I was in love with at the time, who was sort of a nerdy statistician. And my geologist is kind of a nerdy geologist. Very lovable young man. He's in his 30s. And then there's a hardware store in Gainesville, or there was, that I just loved. And so another character who is a native Floridian and a county commissioner owns a hardware store. And she sort of grew out of that hardware store, and the hardware store shows up in a couple of my novels, as does she. So I start with an image. My second novel started with I suddenly thought of a baby left behind a dumpster. And the baby in the novel did not stay behind the dumpster, but she did get dumped. And what was my third novel? Oh, yeah. Was I washing the window? Yeah, I think I was recently retired, and I was doing something that I've probably done twice in my life, which was washing my bedroom window and with my back to the woods. I have a little bit of woods on my property. And I suddenly pictured a man standing behind me watching me. And that led to, I don't have a favorite novel, but that led to a pretty wonderful novel.
You mentioned that characters, anyway, some of the characters yeah. show up in more than one of these novels. Do you see this becoming a series, potentially?
Not a series. Sometimes, I mean, back 20 years ago, I would have fantasies of somebody wanting to publish the Chronicles of Opicola, or the Opicola Chronicles. That's what it would be called. And it would be, I guess, three novels. But I don't know if anybody ever do that. But they do. Mary Beth Coggins, this county commissioner and hardware store owner, she shows up in, let me think. She actually shows up in all three. In the second novel, she's a major, major character. In the first novel, she's a pretty major character. In the third novel, she's just very minor, but she's there. And the magic that happens in novel number one is sort of a story that the homeless guy in novel number three has heard about. I'm not sure how clear I'm being.
No, this is fine.
I'm weaving through 15 years of writing. So.
Well, and that's what I want to ask, because it looks like there's certainly some overlap between your writing and your career as a lawyer. How did you find time to write?
Oh, darling, let me think. I've just written my speech for my book launch party. So I've been thinking about some of this stuff. Here's what happened. I was a single mother, and I was a lawyer. And I found that both of those activities, single or not, but being a mother and being a lawyer, they take up a lot of sort of creative thought. You know, they keep you up in the middle of the night fretting and stuff. And I seem to only be able to do two things at a time. So it wasn't until my son home when I was about 40 that I was able to then go on with my job, which at the time was at a law school doing social policy work. I got out of the active practice of law after about 5 years. Anyway, then I just had my fiction and my social policy work and activism. And then in the middle of my second novel, I got a couple of foster children. So that sort of put a stop to the writing. And then, you know, when you're 72, it's hard to keep the time straight. But I retired. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but if you're not a spring chicken, you know what I mean.
And it's hard to keep the time straight.
Okay, so you know. Yeah, exactly. Well, it'll just get harder. But, oh dear, now I forgot what I was saying.
Well, let's do this, yeah. Because I'm happy to hear about all these other books, but let's talk about the book that's out, Dreaming the Marsh.
Dreaming the Marsh comes out on Tuesday.
And let's talk about eco-fiction.
Okay.
What does that mean exactly? It's just that the ecology takes center stage in the story, or... How would you describe that?
I think how I would describe it is this. I think in my eco fiction, which is and it's only this one, nature is almost a character. So in Dreaming the Marsh, there are themes which I used to call interludes. They're short themes, a page and a half or so. In Dreaming the Marsh, a sinkhole starts to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. And it eats up the land where these twin sister real estate developers were planning to build a luxury, you know, a big luxury housing development. And it eats part of I-75, and it eats a lake, and it just eats and eats. And in the interlude, there are scenes in the marsh with, for instance, eagles are nesting at the top of a tall pine tree, and as the sinkhole grows, the pine tree topples, and the eagles rise up and fly away. An endangered species of slug is dangling from a bush, and the bush falls. Oh, and in fact, they're making love. I don't know if you know how slugs make love. Is that something you have learned in your life?
It isn't. In fact, this is the first time it's ever come up in conversation.
Well, I'm going to tell you, because it's so amazing. You know how slimy slugs are?
Yeah.
Well, they dangle from a long string of mucus, and they're twined around each other. That's how they make love. But I don't think they call it making love. I don't think of slugs as thinking particularly, but God only knows. Anyway. So these slugs, these are an endangered species. I think there's only like 43 of them left or something. And they fall off the bush and are buried in a pile of, you know, dry sand. And that's the end of those two who were about to make more baby slugs. So the point is, in this book, there are these scenes where the changes in the marsh, we see them affecting the flora and fauna of the marsh. So in that sense, it's eco-fiction. It's also eco-fiction in that it has a concern with the environment, and really this dreadful Dorian, which is such a heartbreaker, this hurricane. It ties in to the theme of this book, which is, you can't mess with Mother Nature, and Mother Nature's going to win.
And to help tell that story, there is a local cafe owner who speaks with the ancients.
Oh, for now, yeah.
And who are the ancients, and why are they speaking to her?
Oh, Lord knows. Here's who speaks to her. I mean, I'll tell you something. When a book is working and you're writing, it is the happiest and most wonderful thing, because, you know, it all comes into your head, and heaven knows from where. But anyway, Vernell Pitano is an elderly black woman. She's tall and lovely, and she wears long caftans, as coincidentally so does her creator. All I wear in the summer is muumuus. Anyway, Vernell owns a coffee shop. She's an elderly black woman, very, you know, middle class, has her normal worries. She fights with her preacher, and she's taking care of her even more elderly mother. And she has a very bright nephew that she worries about because, of course, schools don't always handle young, bright black boys that well. Anyway, so she's an, I want to say, ordinary middle class woman. And but she's descended from the Timucua Indians, from the Patano tribe or group or whatever they're called. And she hears from them in her dreams. But she also, in the closing scene, there is one of the elements, one of the magical elements, because this novel isn't just eco-fiction. You know, you have to have these labels. It's also magic realism. And there is writing that appears on the wall of the new county commission building that cannot be scrubbed off. And Vernell goes down to the county plaza, and as she passes the fountain, the waters rise up. And she stands in front of the wall, and she begins singing these magic words in all the, you don't call them extinct languages, what do you call them when languages
dead
don't
languages.
Exist anymore? Yeah, in all the dead languages, she begins singing the words, and then all the creatures in the plaza hear the tramp and shuffle of ancient feet, and extinct animals come into the plaza and gather behind her. I'll tell you what, this last scene, every time I tell about it or read it, I get goosebumps. Literally goosebumps. It's nuts. I love this scene. But so you've got, Florida has these magnificent fossils. You know, we rose from the sea. And then we have all these wonderful ancient animals. God, I can't remember their lovely Latin names, but there's like there's a camel with this long giraffe-like neck, and there's a saber-toothed cat. And who else is there? Oh, I forget how big this tortoise is. 30-foot crocodile. We have mammoths and mastodons, although I don't think they're in the plaza. And then my very famous, my very favorite, which we have in the Florida, our museum here, we have the skeleton of, is a 15-foot sloth, which stands, have you ever seen a sloth?
Yes.
Yeah, they are just lovable little guys. This guy's 15 feet and towers.
That's a big sloth. That's a big sloth.
That's a big sloth. It really is.
Well, I think.
Go ahead.
I think the phrase that really describes this best is environmental fable.
That's what I call it.
It has, you know, almost a magical, paranormal kind of element to it, while at the same time dealing with some things that we're really facing now about the abuse of land and and the planet and so on. Now,
Mother Nature, my belief is, you know, we are just creatures of Mother Nature. We can't beat it. Or her, or whatever nature is. I mean, we are all simply natural creatures, and we're screwing around with the world. And what is it? They don't say there's no plan B. They say there's no planet B. This is our world, and that's it. And I hope to God we don't go to the moon or anywhere else and screw that up, too.
That thought has crossed my mind.
Yeah, you know we will, because we don't have wisdom. We're terribly smart, and we're just foolish. And I'm, you know, I'm foolish too.
Do you like writing better? Do you like writing better than being a lawyer?
Oh Lord, yes. Because the thing about when I was a lawyer, whether I was teaching law or doing community advocacy or whatever, a couple of things. One is you have to cooperate with other people. And I'm a nice person, you know, and I get along with, I play well with others. But it's real nice just to have it all in your hands. And, I mean, I have an editor, God bless her. And I had a website designer, and she was wonderful, and I have a publicist, and she's such a treat. But this is mine, you know, and I don't have to persuade any county commissions or city commissions. I used to do a lot of, I do a lot of homeless work, more, I used to do more, but, you know, we would all be down at the county commission till God knows what time of night, talking about don't limit the number of meals we can serve, for God's sake. Anyway, fiction, it's mine, you know. It's mine. I love it. And also, you know, it's like Vernell Pertano shows up in my mind. And these animals and the slugs, I love it.
And you can and you can really kind of, even though an area might be inspired by a place that you're familiar with, you can create your own world.
Oh, you do. Oh, yeah. And your own people. And the people become very real to me. I won't say they run away with me. You know, I'm still in charge. But when I have had to put down a book for a couple of years, like when the kids came to live with me, those people were like hanging at the edge of my mind, like sort of like frozen figures in a play. You know, just waiting for me to come back. I'm sorry. I had a big swig of coffee just before I got on the phone with you, so I'm a little little charged up.
Well, that's okay.
Okay.
The are there good guys and bad guys?
There are not. There is. I read a little of your bio on your website. And I learned two things about you that made me laugh. One is you used to drum with the Drifters.
Yes.
And I love that because I sing at nursing homes with a friend of mine, and we sing a couple of Drifters songs. And the other is that you were a classic, what do they call it, a classical music host.
I was.
On radio.
I was on public radio for a few years.
So I thought about my character Randall Fairchild. And he's the closest, and Mary Beth calls him a classical music DJ, and he's very offended by that.
Oh, no,
he
it's
is
host.
The closest, of course it is. Of course it is, because it's so classical and classy. But Mary Beth doesn't have a lot of respect for the guy. He's another county commissioner, and he makes her crazy. He's a Yankee come down to tell the poor ignorant Southerners what to do. And Mary Beth is unimpressed by Randall. But he's not a bad guy. I mean, I can't write bad guys.
Well, that's why
you
I
love
asked,
your characters.
That's why I asked if there are good guys and bad guys. In some stories, especially when there's money and potential corruption involved, like with these developers.
Yeah.
You know, there's this sense that there are people that are intentionally doing evil. And it sounds to me like in this story, the characters are really grappling with their own inadequacies.
Oh, how interesting. With their own inadequacies. No, I wouldn't say exactly that.
Because
I got to tell you.
You know,
yeah, go ahead.
Neglecting things and trying to do it our way instead of maybe the right way. And, you know, they're wrestling with mistakes more than bad intentions.
Definitely not bad intentions. And see, I believe, you know, everybody has their sort of world view. And I think most of us are trying to do the best we can. And most of us want to do right. And that, obviously, there's some exceptions, and we don't need to name them. But most people, it's just like most parents, you know, we're not terribly good at least I wasn't terribly good at being a parent. Well, now I am. But we love our kids, and we want to do the best we can. But, you know, we mostly screw up a lot, not just as parents, but as people. None of my people are bad guys, and Randall, the DJ, is the closest, and he's only a bad guy in the sense that he's terribly insecure. He really likes to be with the right people, and he'll he'll have sexual congress with anybody who comes along who's willing. You notice how I used a very discreet phrase to describe what he does. But he's just one, he's just a mass of insecurities and sort of wanting people to think he's wonderful and, you know, hand-painted ties. And you know a little bit about his childhood, and you sort of see how he got that way. And he wants, you know, he's going to come down to the South and tell him what to do. And his idea is that you have to protect. The marsh is a very environmentally lovely place, and it's based on a lovely place in Gainesville called Payne's Prairie. And his idea is that it has to make money so that you can protect it. So he wants to have dirt bike trails in the marsh, and what else? Oh, he wants to do alligator farming in the marsh and all this stuff.
Elizabeth,
full of ideas.
Before we run out of time, because we just have a couple of minutes left, is
okay.
I wanted to mention the Feminist Grandma blog, because I'm fascinated by that. But also, you mentioned, and I always give guests an opportunity to let listeners know where they can find out more about you and about work that you're going to be doing and having come out, because I imagine this is not going to be your last book.
I hope not.
The book is Dreaming the Marsh, and you have a website.
I do. And it's very simple. It's ElizabethMcCulloughAuthor.com. And should I spell McCulloch, because nobody can spell it?
Probably not a bad idea. I had to hear you say it to be sure how it was pronounced.
Okay. It's Elizabeth McCulloch, McCulloch.com. And on that website, it talks about the book. It has excerpts from the book. It has a lot more about me, if you can stand more about me. And it has two blogs. It has The Feminist Grandma, which is something I've been writing for 8 years. I started writing it when my granddaughter came to live with us, and I had to take a break from novels for a while. And it's about getting old and about friends and family and whatever turns me on, whatever I want to write about. And it's been wonderful writing practice. It's illustrated, beautifully illustrated. And then I have a book review blog called Big Books from Small Presses, which I just began. And I got to tell you, this year of getting ready for my book to come out, I hardly have time to write, but I write whenever I can.
Well, it's
so I love my website, and I hope people will go there.
It's been a delight talking with you, Elizabeth. Thanks so much for sharing a little of your time and talking about your debut environmental novel, Dreaming the Marsh.
Thank you so much, Tom. You know how much it means to me. Thank you.
Okay, take care. We'll have more of the Tom Sumner Program.
Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Swiftlet Technology is a Flint-based engineering services company focused on helping you design a technical solution to your business needs. We offer prototype and proof-of-concept services to help you evaluate your idea, or workforce augmentation to help you make your idea a reality. Specializing in electronics and software, our team is ready to help you figure out what to build and then help you build it. Find out more at swiftlet.technology.
East Village Magazine is the monthly neighborhood magazine read all over Flint. With support from grants, donations, and advertisers, East Village Magazine's talented local writers give you an in-depth look at local news, issues, and people that make Flint, Flint. Copies of East Village Magazine are available at many of your favorite shops and restaurants around Flint or online at eastvillagemagazine.org. East Village Magazine, community-focused and community-supported.
Imagine a journey down a picturesque riverway. Imagine your Flint River, 142 miles of recreation, natural beauty, and precious resources. The Flint River is a vital resource that is available for all to use and enjoy. The river and its ecosystem provide unlimited recreational opportunities and natural beauty while supporting wildlife in a vibrant landscape. We all have a responsibility to protect and preserve this precious resource. Learn more at flintriver.org or call the Flint River Watershed Coalition at 810-767-6490.
Most of the music you hear on the Tom Sumner program is provided by local artists. Tune in Fridays at 11 for live music and conversation with some of the area's most talented singers, songwriters, and performers.
Hi, this is Greg Nagy.
Hey, this is Harper.
Hi, this is Joe Bai from the Blue Hornets.
Hi, this is Alexander Zonjic.
Hi, this is Mark Farner.
This is Maurice Davis.
Hi, this is Rochelle Ray.
Hi there, folks. This is Sweet Willie T.
This is Steve from the Nashville office.
I'm Gwen Pennyman Hempel. Shadoo-ba-dee-ba-doo-da-doo-doo.
Tom Sumner Program, celebrating the rich talent pool from Flint, Genesee County, and throughout Michigan.
Hi, this is Tom from the Tom Sumner Program. If you like talk radio that makes you think without telling you what to think, check out our whole show weekdays from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern at TomSumnerProgram.com. Selected segments are also available on this and other radio stations, but you can hear us anytime. Daily editions of the Tom Sumner Program repeat online all day and night on the show's website. Past shows can be found in the website archives. My long-format interviews with New York Times best-selling authors, photographers, and writers from National Geographic, as well as artists, musicians, candidates, and elected officials are made possible by listeners like you. Support the Tom Sumner Program and Civilized Talk Radio. Visit our website at TomSumnerProgram.com and become a member. You can make a one-time gift or become a sustaining patron by taking the link to the Tom Sumner Program Patreon page. Thanks for listening and thanks for your support.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Hello out there, everybody. It's me, Tigger. T-I-double-G-R. That spells Tigger. And don't forget to remember to listen to Tom Sumner Program on account of because he's so bouncy.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Ladies and gentlemen, in Philip Rapp's creation, The Bickersons.
Like most married women, Blanche Bickerson is a romanticist. Having talked poor husband John into taking her on a second honeymoon, 3 o'clock in the morning finds Mrs. Bickerson in the lobby of a small hotel at Niagara Falls. Exhausted and bleary-eyed from the long drive, John Bickerson unloads the luggage outside as his wide-awake wife talks to the night clerk. Let's listen.
It doesn't really matter about the room as long as we have a nice view of the falls.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll bet you don't remember me.
No, ma'am.
Well, I wouldn't expect you to with all the honeymoon couples you meet. I was here 7 years ago.
Is that so?
Yes.
Well, better luck this time.
Oh, we're still married to each other. We're just having a second honeymoon. Do many people do that?
No, ma'am.
I wonder why.
I wouldn't know, ma'am.
Are you married?
No, ma'am. Arthritis makes me walk this way. Will you please sign the register?
Oh, I'm sorry. Last time we were here, we had to wait 2 days for a room. We stayed in a motel in Buffalo. Oh, here you are.
Thank you. Is that Bickerson?
Yes, didn't I sign it right?
Yes, ma'am. Mrs. John Bickerson and husband. Here's the key, room 318. There's the automatic elevator over there. We don't have any bellboys at night.
Oh, that's all right. I'll go out to the car and get my husband. John, where is he? He's not in the car. I wonder if he took the luggage out of the trunk. Good heavens! John, get out of that trunk, you darned fool! John!
Blanche, shut the door. There's a draft.
Come out of that thing.
All right. Don't pull. Ow, my hand!
Oh, serves you right. Pick up that luggage and straighten yourself up.
Ow.
I don't want you to go in that nice hotel looking like a ragamuffin.
It's a nice muffin. Grab a couple of these bags, will you, Blanche?
No! It wouldn't look right on our honeymoon. Come on!
Oh, my back. Where's the bellboy?
We don't have any at night.
Are you the clerk?
Yes, sir.
Where's the register? I want a room with a bed.
I've already signed it. You've got a room.
Good. Where are you going to sleep?
Come on, John. Stop dragging your feet.
I just drove 2,000 miles for a second honeymoon. Lead me to my room.
You had to talk like that in front of the clerk.
Oh, let me sleep, will you, Blanche?
I'd just like to go one place with you that you didn't embarrass and humiliate me. You've been unbearable since we left home. Keep going.
In here?
Yes. Pull the bags in so I can shut the door.
No windows? No nothing? How much do they get for this broken-down room?
This is the elevator.
Oh, well, push the button or something and get it started. I can't keep my eyes open another minute.
I was afraid this would happen. I'd hoped that going on a second honeymoon would bring us closer together.
Can't get much closer than this, unless you throw the luggage out.
Every time I want you to be romantic, you're so distant, John. What is keeping us apart?
The brown suitcase. What floor are we on? I'm sleepy.
You're always sleepy. When you're not sleepy, you're humiliating me. I'll never be able to face that night clerk in the morning.
You won't have to.
Why not?
There'll be a day clerk. Which way is the room?
I don't know, and I don't care. I'm going to stay in the elevator.
Oh, come on, will you, Blanche?
Well, say you're sorry.
I'm sorry. Now, where's the room?
Right in front of you, 318.
Well, open the door before I collapse. Thank heaven. I gotta get some sleep.
Well, put the lights on. Don't stumble around in the dark.
Don't want to open my eyes. Just aim me at the bed and give me a shove.
I'm not gonna let you sleep until you undress properly and unpack the luggage.
Oh, Blanche, why'd you have to bring so much stuff?
You've got as much stuff as I have.
I have not. All I brought was my toothbrush and my overnight bottle.
You and that bourbon. You wouldn't take 5 steps away from home without it.
Well, I can still remember what happened when we got snowbound in that cabin.
That wasn't so terrible.
Oh, not much. I had to live for 2 weeks on nothing but food and water.
Don't throw my things around like that.
There's no closet. Where shall I put these dresses?
In the drawer.
Where do you want these drawers?
In the dresser. Fold up your pants neatly and put them under the mattress.
Okay.
Well, take them off first. John, what a fool I was to think you'd change. The second honeymoon was just as big a mistake as our first one.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
I'm so sorry you made me go on this trip that I could just die.
I didn't make you go. You shanghaied me, even tried to get me to marry you again.
Was that such an unreasonable request?
Yes, it isn't legal.
Why not?
A man can't be punished twice for the same crime.
Oh, that's too bad about you. How you shame me in front of all my friends. And after I sent the invitations out, too.
Well, I wasn't going to have any formal wedding and put out a lot of dough to feed your hungry friends and their squalling brats.
There wouldn't have been any brats there at all.
How do you know?
Because I said plainly on the invitation, Mr. and Mrs. John Bickerson will be married March 9th, no children expected.
Put out the lights.
I'm never going back to that horrible apartment we live in. I'm going to sit here and stare at the falls forever. Wouldn't hurt you to look at them either, John.
I see them every day on the shredded wheat box.
How can you be so cynical? I'm glad I have a little romance in my soul. Just the sight of those falls brings back memories.
Yeah.
Sit up, John. Look at that cascade. Doesn't it remind you of something?
Yeah.
What, John?
I think I left the water running in the bathtub.
John, you didn't!
Okay, I didn't. Good night, Blanche.
I never should have trusted you to lock up. Now I'm really worried. Did you close all of the windows?
Close the windows.
You didn't leave any lights burning, did you?
No.
Did you leave food for the cat?
Left enough for a week.
What did you leave him?
A 6-pound tin of corned beef.
Did you empty it into a plate?
No.
Well, how do you expect the cat to eat?
I left the can opener on top. Stop worrying about the cat.
We should have taken all the animals with us. Poor little canary locked in the cage. Cat can't get out of the house. And who is going to feed the goldfish? Oh, I'll bet they're terribly unhappy.
Oh, they're not unhappy. They're having a fine vacation.
They are not.
They are, too. When I left, the cat was fishing.
Fishing? Where?
In the goldfish bowl. He was using the canary for bait.
John Bickerson!
Oh, go to sleep. The canary and the goldfish are fine, and I wish the cat would drop dead.
Don't talk like that. I love that cat. When I get home, I'm going to enter him in a cat show.
What for? He couldn't win anything.
Maybe not, but he'd meet a lot of nice cats.
Go to sleep, will you, Blanche?
I'm not sleepy. Why don't you sit up and talk to me?
Blanche, people don't talk at 4 a.m.
You talked until 5 o'clock on our first honeymoon. You kept reciting poetry and telling me how beautiful I was. Do you remember what you said, John?
No.
You told me your love for me was like a raging inferno. You said you had a fierce fire blazing in your breast like a live coal. What happened to it, John?
It's only a clinker now.
How can you say such terrible things to me?
Blanche, I'm so sleepy, I don't know what I'm saying.
I'd like to hear you say things like that to Gloria Gooseby.
Can't I even go to Niagara Falls without Gloria Gooseby?
The only reason you didn't was because she wouldn't have you.
What?
You proposed to her 15 times before you proposed to me. You big second fiddle, you.
I never proposed to Gloria Gooseby, and you know it. And the next time I see her, I'm going to punch her husband Leo right in the nose.
What have you got against Leo? He's a better husband than you are.
I'm sick of hearing that, too. Leo Gooseby is a cheap, chiseling bum.
He is not. He's more generous than you.
Would Leo Gooseby give you a new dress? No. Would he give you a new hat? No. Would he give you a mink coat? No.
Would you give me a mink coat?
No. Why should I give you anything? Leo wouldn't.
Stop screaming. You'll wake up the whole hotel.
Well, stop goading me. You want me to do nothing but fight, fight, fight?
No, I don't. All I do is ask for proof you love me, and you go into a tantrum.
Blanche, what more proof do you want? I tell it to you 1,000 times a day. I raise a new crop of freckles to spell out I love you. I painted it on all the Burma shave signs.
Somebody's at the door, John. Honey, honey, honey. Honey!
Madam, this is not a beehive. It's my bedroom. What are people wandering around in the halls this time of night for? Broken down her tail?
Don't be so crabby. It's probably some nice little bride who can't find her husband. Maybe he's lost.
He isn't lost. He's hiding. Put out the lights, will you, Blanche? I've got a vile headache.
Nobody told you to yell your brains out.
Good night.
If you just stand here and look at the falls for a few minutes, your headache will go away and you'll sleep fine. Where does all that water come from? I once read it goes over at the rate of 346,000 gallons a second. John?
Yeah?
Are the falls higher on the American side or on the Canadian side?
I don't know.
I'll have to find out in the morning. What a majestic spectacle. I'm convinced there's nothing in the world like Niagara Falls.
Except you, Blanche.
Really, John? Why do you say that?
Because you never dry up either.
Good night, John.
That remake of an old radio classic from the Tom Sumner Program Studio Players, which basically boils down to, for that particular performance of an old Bickerson's radio script that originally starred Don Ameche and Francis Langford. Instead, you had yours truly, Tom Sumner, along with my co-host Rhonda Groves Young as John and Blanche, and a riveting performance of The Desk Clerk by Randy Zimmerman. And thanks to all of them, and also thanks to my guest last hour, Elizabeth McCulloch, talking about her debut environmental novel, Dreaming the Marsh. And this is an all sort of literary version of the Tom Sumner program today. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk with people from the Flint Sumner Festival program. Of Writers.
Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.